ba bu ba bu ba bam ba bu ba bu ba 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 bu ba bu ba bam ba bu ba bu ba bam ba bu ba bu ba 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 bu ba bu ba 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 bu ba bu ba bam ba bu ba.
All right, if your son's name is Babuba and he doesn't work, what is he called?
What is that, Wendy?
A Babuba bum.
See, this is why you and I should write Dixie Riddle Cups. I mean, it's good what we're doing. This is constructive. This is a good career. Don't get me wrong. But if we would just be given the keys to the Dixie Riddle Cup factory, we could be writing jokes like that all day. We'd make $1 billion.
Although I feel bad because most of the jokes on the Dixie Riddle Cups are not very funny.
You don't think, why didn't Batman go fishing because Robin ate the worms? You don't think that's funny?
No. That was on a Riddle Cup?
Yeah.
Was that the superhero version?
No, that was the standard version. If you'll remember, it was, you would hold the cup up right, and it would have the question at the top with a little picture. But then to get the answer, you had to tilt to the cup because the answer was written sideways on the side of the cup, and you would get high C all over your pants. I would every time.
I know, and yet we didn't learn to wait till we were finished with the bevy before we turned the cup.
Nope. You'd think through evolution we would have figured out that I'm about to get a juice-filled pants if I read the answer, but that's how it played out.
You speak of like things you're supposed to learn by mistake. I got to find this story quick. It's based out of Florida, which why do
Shocking.
Things... Explain to me the Florida thing again.
For some reason, and boy, scientists have been looking at this for decades, if a story comes up in the news and it's strange, if the people who participated in the story are odd in any way, shape, or form, the chances that it coming from Florida are somewhere around 85 to 90%. No one knows why.
That is just so weird. I've only been to Florida. I think we went to Cocoa Beach once. Mm. And
isn't that where I dream of genius from?
Yes. And do you know what? That's what I thought of the whole time. And when we got to the beach, I looked for the little capsule.
Sure. Where is it? Where's
it
Major Nelson?
There. But I've been there and I've been to the Disney, area.
Orlando, yeah.
So I don't see a lot of weird people in Florida when I go there.
But there's that whole rest. Like, Florida for most people is the two places you just described and then South Florida, anywhere from Miami to West Palm Beach, somewhere in there.
Is the Okefenokee Swamp there too? Because we've been there. Yeah. I know the Everglades are.
Yeah, it's all there. Everything you'd want in a state.
Gentle Ben. I base all my locations on where they
are.
Gentle
Ben is from Florida. I believe Flipper was also from Florida, wasn't he?
Don't make me.
Come on. Now, as good as that is, will you please not make that noise when Senator Al Franken is with us?
Yes.
Because that will startle him.
Yeah, I will not do it. Don't
worry. Be afraid.
We'll talk to him after the 12:30 news. But so, you need to learn things. Like, you would spill high C all over yourself, so you'd think, ultimately, you would go, maybe I'll finish my drink before I turn the Dixie Riddle Cup sideways.
That's right.
Well, there's this mother in Sebring, Florida. I'm not sure where Sebring is. But she is now facing child abuse charges after posting a video on Facebook that appears to show her one-year-old child being bitten by a snake.
Oh, no.
Can I tell you about
Why
this?
Why did that happen?
On Tuesday, the Highlands County Sheriff's Office filed a charging affidavit for one count of cruelty toward a child against Chartel Jeanette St. Laurent, 34 years old.
Hmm.
St. Laurent allegedly posted the video on Friday and deleted it after it went viral. Before she was identified publicly, she told the local station there, WFTS, that she put the snake close to her one-year-old daughter in order to teach her a lesson about wildlife safety. She noted that both she and her son had already been bitten and hadn't been harmed, so she's thinking, it's not going to hurt
right.
the baby.
Come on. It had be a baby, baby.
Chartel Jeanette St. Laurent said, here's her quote, "It had bitten me and my son and didn't leave a mark several times, so I thought it was a good opportunity to introduce the baby without actually her getting hurt," she told the station.
Good logic, Miss St. Laurent.
Isn't this just terrible?
Yeah.
The daughter reached out. This is a one-year-old daughter. Reached out, and the snake struck the baby's right thumb, according to the affidavit. Mm. As a result, the daughter no longer wanted to touch the snake.
Right.
She learned.
One bite and you're out. Now, I wonder, do you already have a fear of snakes at the age of one? Is it an inborn fear?
I'm not afraid of snakes.
You're not afraid of them?
No.
Oh, I'm very afraid of them.
My brother had like a garden snake or garter snake.
Gardener snake.
No, that guard. I think, I don't know which it is. It's one of the three.
It's not gardener. I think it's gardener. That's what we always say.
I think it's a garter snake.
Garter? Like the kind
know.
You'd throw at a wedding?
Yeah.
Is that what you threw at your wedding? Is a snake?
Yeah, I wrapped a snake around my thigh.
That's crazy.
So my brother had a snake. I loved snakes. When we went to Florida, we went to some wildlife place where they let me hold this blue indigo snake and pose for a picture.
Reptile World or something like that?
Yeah. I really am not afraid of
no
him at all.
No fear at all.
But listen to what this mom said. She believes that people are being too sensitive about this incident after she posted the video. Here's her quote. This is what she told the TV station.
Mm-hmm.
They just think that I hurt my child intentionally. The people that know me know that I would never hurt my children.
Right.
But yet you let a snake bite your kid.
Both kids, right?
Yes, but the baby's 1 year old.
Yeah, it's too young.
The snake in question was a tiny red rat snake, a non-venomous snake, and it can grow up to 6 feet long.
Ugh.
It was a baby, though.
Ugh.
St. Lawrence said she found the snake in her driveway and wanted to use it for a teachable moment with her kids on handling wildlife safely. You know what? Here's what you tell them. Don't touch it.
Stay away from snakes. Yeah, I don't understand the logic in that at all.
The video, the snake's teeth are too small to actually puncture the skin, so he's very harmless, she said.
Does this lady have the ability to identify harmful and harmless snakes? Is she an expert in this?
Maybe if you live in Florida and you see snakes in your yard,
maybe.
You know.
All right, maybe.
Or you could Google anything these days. You probably take a picture and say, Siri, is this venomous? The video features the sound of her laughing after her child is bitten.
Cruel.
St. Laurent told police that was because she was surprised by her daughter's reaction to the snake attack.
So the kid gets bit and doesn't react well, and then the mom laughs because she's shocked that that's the reaction from the snake bite?
Yes. She also said she has no regrets for the incident. In a release, the Highland County Sheriff's Office said the probable cause affidavit has been sent to the state's attorney for review. But I know it is our job to teach our kids right from wrong and to hopefully give them life lessons, which now that my kids have both graduated, it's really clicked in my head that I can't do things for them anymore.
Sure.
And I don't want to be mean or rude, but I want to teach them how to fend for themselves.
Right.
Because now it matters.
How to survive, survival skills.
So do you have a snake I can borrow? Because I'm going to let a snake bite my kids.
Yeah, I got a bunch of snakes. If you ever want to find one, just get yourself a can of peanut brittle. They're always in peanut brittle. They always pop out of peanut. I don't know what it is about peanut brittle, but every time I have some, a snake pops out.
I mean, so what if this woman wants to teach her baby how to approach a stray dog?
Right.
Is she going to let a dog maul this kid?
Yes. Yeah.
That's what you don't want to happen, honey. And this is a one-year-old. The one-year-old's not even understanding this.
No, of course you couldn't possibly. And you probably wouldn't, at the age of one, you probably won't remember this
anyway. Thank God.
Will you? Yeah, right, because it'll make her look even worse.
I don't know if your daughter's ever touched a hot stove. As parents, you always say, no, hot. And this is like this woman taking the kid's hand and putting it on a hot stove or over the fire to say, see, that hurts, doesn't it?
Hot was Reese's first word that she said, hot, because anytime she'd come in the kitchen, both Terry and I would point at the oven and say hot like that. But I don't know if she understood what that meant, but we would say it in such a frantic way. So she would just point at anything. She'd point at people and say hot. She'd point at a book and say hot. The TV, everything was hot to her. The meaning was lost on her.
I guess now that I'm thinking about it, maybe you let the kid touch a warm stove, but it's...
Oh.
I don't know.
Maybe with this, maybe a large worm would have been the right answer. You work the kid in. You don't just open with a snake. You start with something small, an eel or something, and then work up.
And if she's... Bill, I just don't understand the human race these days. I honest to God, don't.
The whole race?
I really don't.
Everybody?
Because she's saying people are being too sensitive. They think I'm harming my kid. Well, A, you are.
You did. She did harm her child. The snake bit the kid.
And two, don't put it on Facebook.
No.
What do people do when you put something up on Facebook? They judge you.
They like it or they don't like it.
So that's judging you.
Did this get any likes? Were there people out there who go, I hadn't thought about my baby touching a snake, but maybe we'll rearrange things and have that happen.
No, but it went viral, so...
of course it did. I have my own nominee for Mom of the Month. Can I tell you
over
mine?
Over this one?
Yeah, it's... It's not quite as... No, I would actually probably vote for yours if we were voting Mom of the Month, but listen to what this mom did. This is out of Salt Lake City, Utah, a city that really is nowhere near Florida whatsoever, so I lost points on that alone. Authorities say that a Utah woman pulled two of her son's teeth in a Walmart restroom. Prosecutors said on Monday that the 47-year-old woman bought hand sanitizer and needle-nose pliers from the store.
Oh, my God.
From the Walmart store.
Were they loose?
I don't know what kind of morals this woman had.
No, no. The teeth.
Oh, the
were
teeth?
They baby teeth? Cause
yeah, I'm guessing they were loose. Yeah.
You could just use your hand.
She then... Yeah, you could. She then took them into the restroom after purchasing them. She did this by the book, kind of. I give her points for that.
The Three Stooges book?
And then... Yes.
Do they also tie it to a string and yeah. then to the doorknob?
It's called the Nyuk Nyuk Medical Journal. It's a hard book to find, but boy, is it helpful. They took them being the hand sanitizer and the needle nose pliers, into the restroom.
You can't say needle nose pliers, can you?
I cannot.
Needle nose.
Needle nose. I'm empathizing with this child, Wendy. I don't have time to... I'm so upset by this. She took them all into the restroom and then pulled two of her 7-year-old son's teeth with the pliers and the hand sanitizer, which is an extra bonus. All you really need is the pliers.
No, you don't. You'll get an infection.
Yeah. So you put the hand sanitizer
on your hands.
On the gums or the hand? On the hand?
On your hands. And then I would clean the
pliers.
Needle nose plier with
the pliers. Oh, you clean out the pliers in there?
Sanitizer.
But these are new. These are fresh off the shelf.
You never know.
People still touch them.
Yeah.
Sure. I still don't think that's enough, though.
I am never letting Bill pull any of my teeth.
Come on.
That's probably a good decision, Wendy.
You say that now, but I bet if there's an emergency.
Wait till I'm in my 80s.
Police in American Fork, Utah, say that the boy's older brother heard the child screaming and got him out of the restroom on April the 2nd.
So the brother had to save him?
He was outside. He was hearing screaming to the rescue. Charging documents say that the boy told his brother that one of his teeth was loose, but that the other one was slightly loose. I like a little kid who uses the word slightly. That's impressive also. Prosecutors say that the woman didn't use any kind of anesthetic, which they probably sell at Walmart. Why wouldn't she have bought that? Get the whole package. Get the whole teeth-pulling package.
You could have gotten Orajel.
Yeah, Orajel would have been
that
a nice...
That numbs it for a little
nice
bit.
Nice touch. The woman was charged with felony child abuse. No attorneys immediately were listed in her court records. The Associated Press is not naming her to avoid identifying the child.
Have you pulled a kid's tooth?
No. They've always come out organically.
We kind of let that happen. I was just talking to Jim. We were reminiscing since both kids graduated. We were, can't believe that this has happened. So
yeah.
We talked about when they were babies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he said Michael was in the bathtub one time. It was Michael or Dylan. He can't remember who it was.
Oh.
I think it was Dylan because he used to take him out of the tub, wrap him in the towel and sing, wrap it up, I'll
yeah.
take it. And somewhere along the line, the towel kind of caught on Dylan's loose tooth and pulled it out.
Pulled it out.
And Dylan didn't cry because when they're super loose, it's almost
it's a relief.
Totally.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's hanging by a little string and
yeah.
you're like, oh, just get it. So I understand a mom trying to help, but you do wait till it's about ready to fall out and then you don't need the pliers.
Right. Right.
And why did she do it in the Walmart bathroom? Was she going to then return the pliers?
It doesn't say she had any plans of returning it.
Take them home.
Right. Do it in the privacy of your own home, not in a public place where there's going to be screaming and possible bloodshed.
Like I said, what is wrong with this human race?
I don't know. I don't know. These are questions that we can pose to Senator Al Franken. What is wrong with this human race? The great Al Franken will join us right after the news, right here on the stream. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Bill and Wendy with you on WGN, along with a guest that both you and I have said in the past, if we had to draw up a dream list of who we'd want to have on the show, this man would be high atop both of our lists. It's Senator Al Franken. Hi, Al. How are you, sir?
Oh, sir. I'm great. That's very nice of you to say.
We mean it. We absolutely mean it.
Now, you're going to be at the Printers Row Lit Fest, and you're going to be talking about Al Franken, Giant of the Senate.
That's right, yes.
Before we had you on, we said, what's going on with this world? Do you have any answers for us?
Well, I did an event about my book with David Letterman a few days ago, and he said at the event that he's beginning to lose faith in the Trump administration.
Oh, that's sad.
Beginning to.
Yeah. That's understandable. And why shouldn't we, Al? I mean, this, it started out, and it's so funny because we're talking to you, a guy who at some point, when you decided to turn to politics, a lot of people said, wait, that, he's a writer. He's a comedy writer. Can he be a politician? So you get that that transition's a tricky one, right?
Yeah, and I've been doing a radio show for about 3 years and had on Air America. I've been doing pretty heavily a public policy radio show. When I went on, I'd written a book called Rush Limbaugh's Big Fat Idiot and Other Observations, and I didn't want to do the mirror image of his show. I wanted to do the opposite of his show. So we did some comedy on it, but it was a serious show. And I had people like Elizabeth Warren on talk about middle class squeeze long before she got to the Senate, of course. And, but I took this all very seriously. I felt that I owed it to the people of Minnesota to show that I was willing to get into the weeds on policy and do the work. And then, 8 years later, this current president runs, and he'll say things like, nobody knew healthcare was complicated until I figured it out. Or, I mean, he says things that are just kind of an affront to everyone who, looks to the president for real leadership on the problems facing our country, and including, included in that leadership is, like, read something every once in a while.
I don't know if I'm happy he takes to Twitter or if I'm scared. In a weird way, it's like I kind of want to know what is going on, but it drives me nuts. Should they take his Twitter account away?
Well, he's the president. I think he has authority over whether they take his Twitter account away, and he obviously doesn't want them to. So that's what we're going to see his tweets. We're going to keep seeing them.
Is there any chance that at some point there will be an about face and he or the people who are pulling the strings will say to him, look, we have to make this work. Let's play by the rules. Is there any chance of that happening?
I don't know. I mean, have you seen any willingness on his part to change?
No.
I'm sure every day he says, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. He just says that. He doesn't know what he's saying, though. He's outside the norm, the norms of what we've expected, that what we expect from a president, and outside the norm what you expect from a human being. So this is a difficult time.
So how do you handle it, sir? How do you, like, you know what you have to do as part of your job, and at some point you're in the room with the man. How do you keep a straight face, for lack of a better term?
I have only been in the room with him when we did, at least since he's been president, during the joint session of Congress that he spoke to, and I didn't have to talk to him then. So I haven't actually had a conversation with him. I'll be respectful. I'm very respectful of the office.
Sure.
And, I guess I will be. It depends what he says to me.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
But that hasn't happened yet. I imagine it'll happen soon. But I haven't had that conversation yet.
Respect for the office, I do too. I'll flat out admit I did not vote for Donald Trump, and I try to be hopeful because we're all in this together. If he succeeds, we all succeed. But, respecting the office of the president, he's not respecting the office of the president. I know that,
but still, I, at least in theory, respect the office of the president enough in theory to say when I see him, I respect the office of the president. And again, it depends what he says to me. But most of this book that I've written is really answering questions about my career and my career in the Senate, obviously, but also beforehand. I guess the question I get asked the most is being a United States Senator as much fun as working on Saturday Night Live? And the answer, of course, is no. Why would it be? But it's the best job I've ever had because I get to improve people's lives, the people of Minnesota and the people of the United States, and also, I for example, think it was a horrible, horrible mistake to leave the Paris Agreement. I was in Paris for that, for the conference, and I think global climate change is the existential issue of our time. I have three grandchildren now. I don't want them in 50 years saying, Grandpa, you were a United States senator. You knew global climate change was happening. Why didn't you do anything? And also, why are you still alive? Because I'd be about 116 in 50 years. But I you know, this guy is making it, making this a hard period of time for everybody. But I'm very, very, very happy that I'm in the Senate right now.
Al, is it as simple as this? They published a list the other day that showed the amount of money that's changed hands between big business and various politicians that have voted the wrong way on climate. Is it just as simple as money changing hands? Are these guys on the take that much for money that they're willing to look the other way when the planet's in danger?
I don't think it's necessarily money changing hands. I think that in many cases it's the threat of money being spent against you, and by you I mean a Republican senator, because the Koch brothers, Siegfried and Roy, they can spend an unlimited amount of money, and they can actually hide it, so it's dark money. But a Republican senator from a red state knows that probably the only way he'll be defeated is not by a Democrat, but by a Republican running from his right and funded by the Koch brothers, who have, you know, made most of their money in fossil fuels. And those, they are willing to drop 10 million, 20 million, 30 million against a Republican who isn't singing the right tune on climate. So these guys, I'm on the Energy Committee, and I know these guys know, and men and women know that this is happening. They just are afraid to say anything.
It's tragic.
It's
yeah.
pretty awful situation.
Yeah, it's tragic.
And I think likewise they're afraid to say much about the way the president is conducting himself, for the same reason, maybe also because Trump's base is still more or less with him, and that's their base. So I think they're a little afraid to offend their base. So right now, I think Republicans are in every bit as uncomfortable position as every American is about this president.
Senator Al Franken with us. He will be at the Printers Row Lit Fest this Saturday, correct? 3:45, Saturday, June 10th. Your book?
I think it might be 3 o'clock.
Oh, yeah, excuse me, 3 to 3:45. Yeah, I don't want to make you late.
Yeah.
Can we talk about something you do to escape this world? And you're a big Grateful Dead fan. Saw you featured in the new Long Strange Trip.
Oh, yeah, that's the doc.
The new documentary.
About the dead, yeah. I actually was in Chicago for the Fare Thee Well concert, so I was there at Soldier's Field, and I've been a big Deadhead for a long, long time. And
do they really sound better from the porta potty?
You heard that. That was at Soldier's Field, I got to sit in the friends and family section, which was near the soundboard, and they had a couple porta potties there, and I went in
the VIP ones.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, they're porta potties. What can I say? That's what they were. But I went in there, and Phil's bass sounded great, and I just thought of sort of, not me, I'm a senator, I don't take any kind of drugs, but of like a Deadhead who had taken a lot of acid, kind of getting in the porta potty and going like, oh man, you know, Phil's bass is just unbelievable in here. And then just staying there for the entire concert.
Hell,
I've never heard Phil so good. Go ahead. Go ahead,
if you wouldn't mind, talk a little bit about your writing partner, Tom Davis, because what a partnership that was in the early days of SNL. What do you miss most about him?
Well, I obviously miss my how funny he was and our friendship. We started together in high school, and we started performing at a place called Dudley Riggs Brave New Workshop, which was like Third City. It had the same kind of the vibe as Second City, in fact, the same kind of improvisational basis. And Tom and I were a comedy team, and we started together in high school and got the job at Saturday Night Live when I was 24, Tom was 23, and we were among, you know, we were two of the first, that group of the first writers of the show that were there, and we had a great partnership. He died a few years ago, and my daughter Thomason Davis Franken after Tom. We had something of a falling out at one point because of he was sort of your garden variety alcoholic and drug user, but we we renewed our friendship, and when he died, we were very close. Danny Aykroyd and I were with him just a couple days before he died, and we talked about the Julia Child bleeding to death sketch.
That's so great.
Tom and I wrote that for Danny, yeah. And Tom was actually under the counter pumping the blood.
Was he really?
The blood pressure. Yeah, it was a insecticide sprayer. And Danny, could control the spurting, but the pressure had to be right. And Tom knew the piece extremely well. And it's a special effects, spurting blood, and that's a union job, but the union guys love Tom. But we were talking about how Tom was underneath the counter, during the live show. And, he always had a sardonic humor, sense of humor, but he was even more sardonic that day. But he actually was diagnosed with cancer and given about a year to live, and lived 3 years. And the way he handled it really was a kind of a gift to me. I write about it in the book. I did a eulogy, really, on the floor, and I had to practice it like 40 times so I wouldn't cry, because I'm a crier. And the next day, Harry Reid, I'm in the Judiciary Committee, Harry calls me up, they tell me Harry's on the phone in the ante room, and Harry just had read it and said, you know, he's quite a guy. I said, yeah. And he read I had read something that Tom had written called The Dark Side of Death. And it was, he said, in a little while I will be a dead person, and let me remind you that dead people are people too. Some of my best friends are dead people. But he kind of, they're good dead people, they're bad dead people. And then he ended with saying, like, and dead people have fought in our nation's wars. And Harry just said, "That's perfect." And I said, "Yeah, it's perfect." Tom was just brilliant. And after he died, I heard so much from people, and also just people posting, giving him his due, talking about how much they loved him or how many laughs he gave them. And actually, it was Tom who turned me on to the Dead.
Right? Yeah.
And we went to a lot of Dead concerts together.
You guys were responsible for so much great stuff, but I'll tell you the one thing that to this day, and it's 40 years ago, and I can't think about it without laughing, is when you guys were the comedy team that weighed the same.
That was a really stupid idea, but we were going on Letterman, and we had like a date 2 weeks out. And I just said to Tom, how much do you weigh? Because I didn't know how much time weighed. And he said, oh, I don't know, like about 170. And I said, oh, I weigh about 180. Why don't I lose some weight and you gain some weight? And we go on as the comedy team weighs the same. And then we start doing that, and then Tom weighed himself, and he weighed like 165. And I had to lose more weight. But we got there for the show. And we showed up in robes and Speedo swimsuits, and we did a weigh-in. But I remember Dave asked, like, any funny stories from being the comedy team weighs the same, and it was Tom says, yeah, actually, we went to the carnival the other day, and you know the guy who can guess your weight? Yeah. He saw us coming, and he couldn't believe it. And then we did the weigh-in, and we each weighed like 168, you know, point one.
Boy.
That was the comedy team that weighs the same.
But maybe that's what's missing from comedy is, as you just said yourself, it was a really stupid idea, but here we are 40 years later still thinking about it and laughing. So what's wrong with that?
No, some of the best stuff I ever wrote was really stupid. And that's the comedy can be really stupid. I wrote a lot of the political satire on the show. I write about that and what, you know, we didn't feel it was our job to have a political bias, so I didn't start doing, really writing about my political satire, which basically heaps scorn and ridicule on right-wingers and Republicans, et cetera, until after I left the show. But I'm very proud of that stuff. But I also wrote, Tom and I also wrote Belushi as Elizabeth Taylor choking on a chicken bone.
That's amazing.
I mean, you know. That's what I loved about the show. People ask me, like, what's your favorite memory of Saturday Night Live? And it's not one memory. It's just being there up there on the 17th floor on late Tuesday night or early Wednesday morning when we're writing read-throughs on Wednesday, and I'm just falling on the floor laughing at something somebody just came up with. And whether it was, you know, Dana Carvey or Jim Downey or Tom or, you know, Dan Aykroyd or any of the unbelievably great people that I worked with, there's nothing better in life than laughing so hard that you're just rolling on the floor.
Sure.
You know, so.
It beats working for a living.
But this is the best job I've had because I get to do things. The first bill I passed was the thing that got service dogs to veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan with invisible wounds like PTSD and brain traumatic brain injury.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I've done a lot on all kinds of things, on mental health and on education and job training. And whenever you do one of those things and accomplish something, there's no better feeling. And then going back to my state and seeing how great people are in Minnesota, and I know every other senator feels that way about people in their state. It's a tremendous honor to be a United States senator, and it's a tremendous opportunity to try to make the world a little better place.
You're doing a heck of a job.
Oh,
I mean, congratulations on all the work you've done.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was very kind of you to say.
And I have to say this, Al, you don't pull any punches in the book. You're very critical of things that need to be critical of. And Ted Cruz is a constant target. And you said this the other day, and I love this. This is a quote from you from the other day. I probably like Ted Cruz more than most of my colleagues like Ted Cruz, and I hate Ted Cruz. That's beautiful.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about Ted, and I do write a chapter about him, but it's really because he's an exception that proves the rule. To get anything done in the Senate, you really have to be a good colleague, and he's kind of a toxic coworker.
Yeah.
He's like the guy who, you know, microwaves fish in the lunchroom.
Yeah.
You know, and he also the number one thing is that your word has to be good, and in the chapter I write about a conversation we had in which, and then I come back to him on something and he is not truthful. And he doesn't get anything done in the Senate. The only thing he's actually accomplished is shutting the government down once. And so I get along with so many of my Republican colleagues. Lindsey Graham's hilarious. Well, remember when he was like in the presidential race and he was 16th out of 17?
Yes.
And I went up to him and I said, Lindsey, if I were voting in the Republican primaries, I'd vote for you. And he just said, that's my problem. And he was right. And you know, I bond with my colleague. Like, Jim DeMint, who's very, very right-wing, was a senator from South Carolina. The first day I was there, I got sworn in. After I got sworn in, he goes up to me and says, "How are things on the far left?" And I said, "They're great. How are things on the nutcase right?" And he laughed, and then we were friends from then on, based on a, you know, a relationship entirely of giving each other crap. But it was, and my Republican colleagues who I, again, spent a lot of time with my comedy spending, you know, heaping scorn and ridicule on them, they just, "Oh, I see, I get it. They're funny." And, or I'm funny.
Right.
Somebody's funny.
Somebody's funny, and some of them are funny. Not many of them. Tom Coburn. I have to go in a little bit, but I'll tell you one quick story. Tom Coburn, who was a senator from Oklahoma, he's since retired. His nickname was Dr. No, because he always was against pretty much the federal government doing anything. And he was also a doctor. He was an obstetrician gynecologist in his previous career. So he and I just didn't hit it off the first four or five times we talked. So I went up to him. I said, "Tom, can I take you to lunch?" And he said, "Well, I'll tell you what. Take me to breakfast." And so we go to breakfast, and we're sitting in the Senate dining room. We get there, and I go, "Hey, Tom, let's just have fun. Mm-hmm. We can talk about anything we want to talk about. We can talk about politics. We can talk about our families. We can talk about our careers. But let's have fun." He goes, "Okay, we'll have fun." I said, "Okay, let me ask you something. To be a doctor in Oklahoma, do you have to have any formal education?" And he said, "Yes, you got to go to medical school." And I said, "Okay, Tom, that was a joke." And that's what I used to do in my career.
Right.
And then he calmed down, and we had a lovely breakfast, and I taught him what a joke was and what the proper response to a joke was. And then we became very friendly, he never... he never helped me with anything.
Oh, darn it.
But anyway, no. And then I called him up to ask him permission to do this, because other than that Ted Cruz, I asked people if I could tell the story.
Sure.
And I called him up. He's in Oklahoma. He's retired. I said, "Remember that breakfast we had?" "Yeah." I said, "I'd like to write about it in the book. Can I write about it?" "We have a First Amendment. You just write whatever you want." So he hadn't changed.
Good.
Then we talked about our grandchildren. We had a good time.
Oh, all right.
So listen, I got to go. So Saturday I'm going to be in Chicago doing that thing.
Printer's Row Lit Fest, and that's at 3 o'clock. And it's going to be a huge hit. And the book is going to, well, it's already, people love it. It's Al Franken, Giant of the Senate, another great book from the great Al Franken.
And where is the event? Where's the event?
It's at the Jones College Prep, 7th Floor Gymnasium. And that, I don't have the actual place.
We will get the address, and we'll put it on our website. All right?
That's great.
We'll do that. Al,
I love to see people there.
Nice to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, sir.
Big fans.
Good talking to you guys. Thank you.
The great Al Franken, everybody. We'll take a quick break and then close things off. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
That's Tom Jenke.
That is Tom Jenke, friend to everybody's, but a special friend to you. Again, we want to thank Senator Al Franken of Minnesota. His book is called Al Franken, Giant of the Senate. He will be appearing this Saturday, June 10th, at Jones College Prep on the 7th floor in the gymnasium, and the address there is 700 South State Street in Chicago. Go see Al Franken.
3 o'clock. 3 to 3:45.
Right.
And I got to tell you, we had this on our schedule to talk to him about his canceled appearance on the Bill Maher show. I believe he had something going with Kathy Griffin as well and excused himself from that.
Anything with Mr. Met? The Mets mascot? Because I noticed everyone he's been around lately has done something strange.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it was a pleasure to talk to him. And,
yeah.
He is doing good things.
Yes, he is.
Service dogs and mental health. These are things not everybody thinks about.
Right.
So he's doing a good job.
Yep. That's it for today's show.
So are you, Bill.
You're doing a great job. Everyone here is just working.
Kevin, good job.
Kevin's doing a great job.
I mean, whatever, maybe.
Listener Matt out there doing a great job. we're closing it off, but tomorrow's another day, so please tune in. We would love to have you as part of the show again tomorrow. Bye, Wendy.
See you, Bill.